find your place, Judges chapter number 15, and we'll read these first 8 verses here. Judges chapter number 15, and this is the 27th lesson that we've been in the book of Judges, and probably about the 4th we've been on Samson. We've been on him a little while. Judges chapter number 15, we'll read verses 1 through 8. It said, "But it came to pass within a while after, in the time of wheat harvest, that Samson visited his wife with a kid. And he said, I will go into my wife into the chamber. But her father would not suffer him to go in. And her father said, I verily thought that thou hadst utterly hated her. Therefore I gave her to thy companion. Is not her younger sister fairer than she? Take her, I pray thee, instead of her. And Samson said concerning them, Now shall I be more blameless than the Philistines, though I do them a displeasure. And Samson went and caught 300 foxes, and took firebrands, and turned tail to tail, and put a firebrand in the midst between 2 tails. And when he had set the brands on fire, he let them go into the standing corn of the Philistines and burn up both the shocks and also the standing corn with the vineyards and olives. Then the Philistines said, Who hath done this? And they answered, Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he had taken his wife and given her to his companion. And the Philistines came up and burnt her and her father with fire. And Samson said unto them, Though ye have done this, yet will I be avenged of you, and after that I will cease. And he smote them hip and thigh with a great slaughter, and he went down and dwelt in the top of the rock Etam. And that's as far as we'll get tonight. That's sort of a little break there before we go on to something else. But we'll look at those first 8 verses tonight. And really I want to sort of begin in verse number 7. Notice what Samson said there. Samson said unto them, Though ye have done this, yet will I be avenged of you, and after that I will cease. And notice what he said there. I will be avenged of you, and after that I will cease. And I want to preach on the title tonight on the subject of foolish vengeance. Foolish vengeance. Now, if you remember in chapter number 14, starting out in Samson's, what we might say, his adult life, you remember, it's been all about him. It's me, and what he's going to do. And he wanted the Philistine woman. He said, Get her for me, for she pleaseth me well. And it was all about him. And then we preached on me, and then we preached on Mrs. Me last week, and we looked at her, and that she had the same type of mentality that Samson did. Well, chapter number 15 continues the theme that we have in chapter number 14. And what I mean by that, it's still all about Samson. What he's going to do, what he feels like, what his plans are. He says several times, you'll find the phrase, and we'll not point them all out, but maybe just a couple of examples. But in chapter number 15, where he changes his mind, he goes back down to Timnath. He said, I will go into my wife, into the chamber. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that. And there's an I in verse number 3, and there's an I in verse number 7. And in all of these events in chapter number 15, down through verse number 8, you'll notice in Samson's life, there's no praying that goes on. There's no talking about God's will. There's no talking about the Lord guiding him and leading him. All of that is absent from these events in Samson's life. But in verse number 7, you'll notice he said this. He said, Yet will I be avenged of you. Now that word avenged there, it's vengeance, or we might call it revenge. He said, I'm going to get revenge for what you've done to me. I'll have vengeance on you. Or be avenged of you. Vengeance is this. When somebody sets out to get vengeance, it is the affliction of pain on another in return for an injury or offense. And so he says, you hurt me, I'm going to hurt you back. I'm going to hurt you back with interest is what he says. You hurt me in this way, I'm going to hurt you back twice as bad. That's what vengeance is. And There's an old saying about vengeance and or having a grudge against somebody. And it's this: a grudge is the only thing that will not get better when nursed. If you have a grudge against somebody and you nurse that grudge, you feed that grudge, it doesn't get better, it gets worse. And so we see that here in Samson's life as well. And we'll see that when it comes to vengeance, that there is no such thing as Samson in verse number saying, "Well, I'm going to get you back, and then I'll stop." That's what he said. "I'll be avenged of you. I'll do this thing, and then I will cease." But he does not cease, and there's no end to it. There's no end when somebody starts tit for tat. Sometimes we call it that. They start retaliating one person against another person. There's no such thing as just ceasing. What there is, though, when we set out to get vengeance against somebody, is there is always an escalation. There's always, you know, it started out with one thing and then it grows to something else. It starts out with one person and then two people are involved, then a whole family, then a whole, you know how the thing goes, a whole country is involved. And so retaliation, vengeance, things like that generally go from bad to worse. Now, our lesson tonight as New Testament believers, we go over into the book of Romans chapter 12, verse number 19. Paul said this: "Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath, for it is written, 'Vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord.'" And so as New Testament believers, we are not to be like Samson. We are not to be people that will set out and say, "Well, you know what? I'm going to go out and I'm going to get even. I'm going to get back at that person for what they've done to me." Now, we might think tonight, well, that doesn't apply to us. Surely we're beyond that. We're more mature than that. We have grown in the Lord beyond that. But I would say tonight that probably all of us, if we'd examine our hearts and lives, there might be somebody, there might be something, there might be some group, there might be somebody at work that, you know, you wouldn't maybe set out to take vengeance on them, but if something bad happened to them, you know, you wouldn't exactly be sad about it. And it can creep in pretty quickly. I was taking off the garbage today, and I was going down the road, and you know how traffic around Boone is. Dad always said, even when I was young, he said, "If you can learn to drive in Boone, you can drive anywhere." And I mean, people are crazy. They're not going to get anywhere. Might as well just slow down and enjoy the scenery. But I was going down the road, and right there at the old store at the end of 194, somebody's cutting left. And that's always a dangerous place. People are flying down Boone Mountain. And so somebody's cutting left in front of me, so I slow down. I have to stop. And there's a person behind me in a pickup. He just flies around everybody. And, you know, barely even slowed down, stuff bouncing all out in his truck. And that sort of made me mad. You know, it just hit me wrong. And the person turned left, and I went on down the road. The guy didn't go a mile down the road, and he just pulled off beside the road and said, "And but I had thought to myself when he flew by me, I thought, you know, if he went and wrecked, I believe I'd just drive on by. I believe I'd just wave and drive. That was the thought that came to me. Now, I probably wouldn't actually do that. But have you ever had something like that happen? And, you know, you say, "Well, where's the cops now?" You know, if I'd done that, I'd get pulled over. Other people do all kinds of things. And so don't think tonight that any of us are not above having vengeful thoughts. Well, if somebody does you wrong, or if somebody hurts your family, boy, that's a hard one. That's a hard one. If somebody hurts your children, if somebody hurts your wife, if somebody hurts your husband, we might be dealing in our lives with some vengeful thoughts. But vengeance is foolish. And we'll see that tonight in the life of Samson. Number one, he was foolish in his assumption. Now, verses 1 and 2. "But it came to pass within a while after, in the time of wheat harvest, that Samson visited his wife with a kid. And he said, 'I will go into my wife, into the chamber.' But her father would not suffer him to go in." And so he was foolish in his assumption. He assumed something, and he was foolish in doing that. Now, notice the language of verse number 1. It said, but it came to pass within a while after, in the time of wheat harvest. Now, that same phrase is translated in chapter 14 in verse number 8 like this: and after a time. And so in chapter 13, chapter 14, chapter 15, the Lord wants us to know there's time has taken place. All these things didn't happen just one day after another. But when you find a phrase like this in the Bible, it came to pass within a while after. And in chapter 14, verse 8, and after a time, he returned to take her, and he turned aside to see the carcass of the lion. And behold, there was a swarm of bees and honey in the carcass of the lion. Now, I thought to myself in verse number 8, how long would that take? How long would it take for a lion that had been killed for his insides to either be eaten out or rot out? And in the desert like that, or in the Middle East over there, it's very arid. It's not like around here, you know, stuff lays around, it'll rot. But out in some places, they'll lay there. And so here's a carcass of a lion, and it's been dead some time, and a swarm of honeys come and make bees in there. Swarm of bees come and make honey in there. You know, that wouldn't happen in just a week, I don't think. I think some time has to elapse. And so in chapter 14, in verse number 8, between him killing the lion and then the next time he goes down through there, some time had elapsed. And in chapter 15, in verse number 1, but it came to pass within a while after, some time had taken place. Weeks, maybe even months. The Bible said in verse number 1, it also gives us another clue. It says, in the time of wheat harvest. One commentary I was reading said that it could have been up to a year later that Samson makes his way back down to Timnath. So however long it took a while. It took a while. And what happens here in verse number 1 is that Samson, although he was angry and he left in a huff and he left his wife, now he has cooled down a little bit. He has thought it over and he decides that he's going to go back to his wife. He brings a present, which the Bible said that Samson visited his wife with a kid. And what that was in Bible days, they were going to have a meal together. He had planned this all out. And he brought a meal. He brought a little goat. And there he's going to go into the chamber. He's going to go into her bedroom. He's going to consummate the marriage. But what he does not realize, that there's been a lot of time taking place since he was there last time. And remember the circumstances in which he left. He went and killed a bunch of men and come back angry. And he left, and he didn't come back. And so he was foolish in his assumption. He just takes for granted that everything, Samson, I've decided to come back. He just assumes that everything's going to be fine. Now that lets us know some things about Samson. Samson is prideful sometimes. Samson he's really immature. And what? How do we know he's immature? He's conceited. He's self-centered. He is oblivious to how life really is. I mean, does Samson really think that he's going to leave in anger like that? He's going to stay gone for weeks, for months, and he's just going to go back and bring supper, and everything's going to be all right? That is foolish. That's foolish for him to think that she's just going to be there waiting for him. Samson does a lot of things in his life where he is without wisdom. He does some foolish things. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 1, the last part of the verse says, a wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. And Samson exhibits some things in his life of foolishness. And we already know that it was heaviness to his mother and his father. They tried to talk him out of going down there and marrying that woman to begin with. They said, don't do that. She's a Philistine. Can't you find a good Jewish girl to bring home to us? Don't do this, Samson. But he said, get her for me. She pleaseth me well. And he has some foolish traits in his life. Now, I'm studying this. I'm looking over this. I'm trying to find as many good things to say about Samson as I can. I'm trying to give Samson a break and find good in his life, but I'm struggling in doing that. Have you ever seen somebody that will do something that is terribly wrong, but they cannot see that they've done anything wrong? That's the kind of person that Samson is up to this point. I mean, he has done wrong in a lot of ways. He even done, and we say, well, he shouldn't have went down there and married that girl. No, he should not have done that, but you know what? He did. And what's the first thing he done? He left her. And he stayed gone a long time. And then he shows up on the doorstep like everything's going to be fine and wonderful. And then he's offended that they're not glad to see him. You ever seen somebody do that? They do something terribly wrong. They cannot see that they've done any wrong. And then they're upset that other people are upset over what they've done that's wrong. There's a lot of people pull stuff like that. What about them? They're conceited and they're immature and they're self-centered and they're prideful. And, well, that's how Samson is. And so, who does Samson think he is? He said, I'm just going to show up on the doorstep. I'm going to go into my wife. Everything's going to be all right. But her father would not suffer him to go in. Dad meets him at the door. Hey, what do you think you're doing? You can't just go in there. Look at verse number 2. And her father said, I verily thought that thou hadst utterly hated her. Well, I can see why he thought that. Samson's actions. Samson's been gone now a long time. Therefore, I gave her to thy companion. Is not her younger sister fairer than she? Take her, I pray thee, instead of her. Who does Samson think he is? No wonder her father gave her to someone else. Whether that's right or wrong, it's neither here nor there. Her father offered Samson the younger sister. Now, as I've studied this out, I believe why didn't he just run Samson off? Well, he might have been afraid of him. Samson killed 30 guys not long ago. But I believe more than that is that Samson's parents had probably went ahead and paid a dowry. They had a business transaction with this man. This man thought, hey, Samson, he's gone. He give his daughter to another man to marry. So he's still financially obligated. And he said, her younger sister is still here. Take her. But basically he said, sorry, no refunds. You can take the little sister, the younger sister. It's the best I can do. Your wife is married to another man now. He was foolish in his assumption that everything was going to be all right. Number 2, he was foolish in his assessment. Look at verse number 3. And Samson said concerning them, now shall I be more blameless than the Philistines, though I do them a displeasure. Now, an assessment is this, to value something, to fix the value of. And so Samson says in his mind in verse number 3, he says, they done me wrong. And I'm sure he's going down the list in his mind. They plowed with my heifer. They kept on to my wife, and she kept on to me, and found out the riddle, and they found out my riddle. They cheated me. Well, he shouldn't have been gambling to begin with. They took my money. They made me look like a fool. They took from me. And Samson says, now I'm going to take from them. And he justified all of it in verse number 3. That's what he's doing. He's justifying his actions. And Samson said concerning them, now shall I be more blameless than the Philistines, though I do them a displeasure. Now, he justifies all of it. I'm going to get even with them. He probably used a Bible verse, although the Bible doesn't say that he did. But you know, the Bible does say eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. I can just hear Samson saying that or thinking that. It does say that in Deuteronomy chapter 19, verse 21. It said, and thine eye shall not pity, but life shall go for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. And so the Old Testament law, it does say that. But there is a difference between what the Bible is talking about over there in the book of Deuteronomy and what Samson was doing. In the book of Deuteronomy, under the law, it is teaching that justice is righteous. Life for life. If a man kills another man, in the Bible you find that capital punishment is justified. And so in the book of Deuteronomy, when it's talking about an eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth, and a foot for a foot, it is talking about the subject of justice. And if justice is carried out, it must be carried out orderly. And God gave a law and God gave government to carry out, to punish evil. And when justice is carried out, there is a court, there is a judge, there is a trial, there is a finding, there is a sentence, and there is a judgment. And if there are not things like that in place, then we might as well live in the old West where everybody just goes around shooting each other. I'm thankful for government when government does what government is supposed to do. And it's to protect the good and punish the evil. That's the purpose of government. But what Samson does is just pure old vengeance. I'll get vengeance. I'll get revenge for what they've done for me. Samson is like an old Clint Eastwood movie. You know, he's just going to go out and get even. He's just going to go out and he's going to get blood for blood. He's going to get even with these fellas for what they've done for him. That was his assessment. They hurt me, I'm going to hurt them back. I'm going to do worse to them than they've done to me. That's what he's saying in verse number 3. Number 3 tonight, he was foolish in his actions. Now, look what he done. I've read a lot about this. Foxes were very, very prevalent. Somebody said, how's a man catch 300 foxes? Probably about the same way out west they still catch jackrabbits. When we lived out in Idaho, Mr. Bob told us about how that they would, and jackrabbits are a problem. They're a nuisance, sort of like groundhogs. But they just are in droves. And what they will do, they'll go out in the sagebrush. They'll set up a perimeter of nets. They'll drive them into the ground, make sort of a semicircle, and they'll have a rabbit drive. And they'll get a bunch of men together, and they'll go through, and they'll get all these rabbits running in one direction, and they'll run into those nets, and they can catch a whole bunch of them at one time. So I have no problem believing Samson over a day or a few weeks, or maybe went down the farmer's market, I don't know, but he got 300 foxes. Verse number 4, and Samson went and caught 300 foxes and took firebrands. That's homemade torches. What did he do? He turned tail to tail. He tied their tails together and put a firebrand, a little torch, in the midst between two tails. And when he had set the brands on fire, he let them go into the standing corn of the Philistines. Now remember, it's the time of the wheat harvest. Everything's dry and brittle. There were shocks out there. Dried wheat. Set the brands on fire. He let them go into the standing corn of the Philistines and burn up both the shocks and also the standing corn with the vineyards and olives. Now, you've got to give Samson some credit. He's very creative in his vengeance. If he had just got one fox and set its tail on fire, the fox would have run into its den. But can you imagine the havoc of two foxes tied together, tails on fire, running down the road? No wonder it burned up everything. You talk about an economic hardship. Run through their wheat fields, run through their shocks where they'd already harvested and standing out in their wheat, run through the vineyards, run through the olive trees. That's what it said. It burned up both the shocks and also the standing corn with the vineyards and olives. And now that they'd be some. Boy, they'd be all upset about cruelty to animals. Well, that's one thing. Cruelty to animals. Now, some of these people were involved, but not all of these people. Loss of property, loss of livelihood, economy. No doubt, in a fire that big, there's probably some people lost their lives, got burned up in it. He was foolish in his actions. I'm still thinking about this, though. I'm trying to find, you know, the spiritual side of this, searching for an answer. If you remember back in chapter 14, verse number 4, look what the Bible said. But his father and his mother knew not that it was of the Lord that he sought an occasion against the Philistines. For at that time, the Philistines had dominion over Israel. You have to remember in the midst of all of this that God is still, he's going to use Samson to deliver the Philistines. But how does God use somebody like Samson? How does the Lord use this? How is this an occasion to judge the Philistines? Now, I was studying about this today. We have to remember the book of Judges is a picture of the last days, like the days we're living in. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. Everybody's doing his own thing, including even Samson. Everybody's living that way. And I got to thinking about this. Do you know there's more than one place in the Bible where God uses selfishness and haughtiness and lust and worldliness to judge selfishness and haughtiness and lust and worldliness. God is using Samson, and Samson is not perfect. But God is using Samson to judge people that are just like Samson is. And here's another example of that. Do you remember when God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah? What was the occasion that God used to judge Sodom and Gomorrah? Old backslid Lot. Lot is the reason. Lot was down there in the midst of all of that. And God used Lot being down there to send those angels down there to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. Think about today, even in our country. Who's tearing down our country? Who is tearing down our country is not who's been blamed for tearing down our country. For years, the news has blamed Christians, family people, gun owners, conservatives. Oh, they're the worst thing that's ever happened to this country. They're going to, they need to be stopped and all that bunch of junk we've heard and heard and heard. But look around us today. Who is tearing down the country? It's the other crowd. It's the crowd that does not love it. There is a generation in our country that are just like spoiled children, and they have the attitude, if we can't have our way, we'd just as soon burn it all down. Can you imagine if people would have talked about assassinating Obama and all this stuff like they do President Trump? But it's just regular. Attack, attack, attack. Here's what the Bible said in Proverbs 30:11. There's a generation that curseth their father and doth not bless their mother. There's a generation that are pure in their own eyes and yet is not washed from their filthiness. There's a generation, oh how lofty are their eyes and their eyelids are lifted up. There's a generation whose teeth are as swords and their jaw teeth as knives to devour the poor from off the earth and the needy from among men. That generation lives among us today. And that generation is so selfish that they would just as soon see everything destroyed. God uses selfishness and greed and worldliness and lust to destroy the same thing. It was Jezebel's own crowd that threw her out of the top window. It wasn't somebody from the outside that destroyed her. It was somebody from the inside that destroyed her. Somebody in her own household. The eunuchs. What are they doing up there anyway? Well, look on down. Number four. He was foolish in his accomplishment. Well, he really laid a hurting on them. And it's one of them things you'd like to see a review. I'd like to see instant replay of them foxes running around. Boy, you talk about havoc. He created a lot of havoc and he laid it on them, we might say. But he was foolish in his accomplishment. Now remember, he went back down there to get back with his wife, get back together with her. But in verse number 6, look what the Bible said. Then the Philistines said, who hath done this? And they answered Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he had taken his wife and given her to his companion. And the Philistines came up and burnt her and her father with fire. I don't think that's what Samson had in mind. He went down there to get back together with his wife. And these Philistines, what did they do? They went up and they burnt her and her father in the house. Well, there's some lessons in here. Better be careful who you're hanging around with. I mean, this crowd had already threatened to burn them up one time. Chapter 14, verse 15. They said, entice thy husband that he may declare unto us the riddle, lest we burn thee and thy father's house with fire. Better be careful who you hang around. You might get burned, literally. Boy, they got burned. There's a lot of lessons in this. Violence in the Middle East hadn't changed much in 3,500 years. I mean, we're violent in America. But they're violent over there and have been a long, long time. Killing, burning, beheading, all that stuff. That's a way of life with the Philistines. His accomplishment, well, he got his wife killed. That's one thing. Number five, his analysis. Look in verse number 7 what he said. And Samson said unto them, though ye have done this, yet will I be avenged of you, and after that I will cease. Well, he said, now I'm going to get you back again. Yeah, I burnt your fields up, you killed my wife, now I'm going to get vengeance on you again. And after that I will cease. That was his analysis, but he was wrong. It's not about to stop, it's just about to get started. And that's how vengeance is. It just goes on and on and on. Proverbs 17 and verse 14, the Bible says over there, the beginning of strife is as when one letteth out water. And I believe in my In my book I wrote, I did a devotional on that. But you think about, what is that meaning? The beginning of strife is as when one letteth out water. It's talking about when you first start to go to the restroom. Once you start, it's hard to stop. That's what that means. The beginning of strife is as when one letteth out water. Therefore, leave off contention before it be meddled with. You'd better be careful what you start. You may not be able to stop it. Once punches start to be thrown. Boy, in our day and time, used to, you know, I guess guys would get in a fight and they'd get over it. Now there's going to be a stabbing and a shooting and a riot. Better leave it off before it be meddled with. His analysis was, man, I done this, they done that to me, now I'm going to get back at them, and I will cease. And verse number 8, now I'm about done tonight. The Bible said, and he smote them hip and thigh with a great slaughter. Well, he goes out and he fights them hip and thigh with a great slaughter. We've really not covered many verses, but there's already a lot of killing going on. And it's going to get worse. He smote them hip and thigh with a great slaughter. And he went down and dwelt in the top of the rock Edom. He smote them. He fought them. He killed them. A bunch of them. The ones, I guess, that burn up his wife and his father-in-law. And he went and he got vengeance on them. And he, no doubt, dusted his hands off. Says, boy, there, that'll teach you. You know, I bet he didn't feel any better, though. Vengeance usually doesn't make a person feel better. If we have a grudge, you know who it's hurting? It's hurting you. It's not hurting the other person. They may not even know about it. It's just hurting you. It's just eating at you. And carried out, vengeance carried out really doesn't make you feel any better. But he killed them, slaughtered them, smote them, the Bible says. And he went down and dwelt in the top of the rock Edom. Now, I believe what he did, he went down there to hide out. That word Edom there, it means the ground of a hawk. It's a very tall, high mountain he goes to. And what he's going to do, no matter where he goes, he's going to get Israel involved in it now. His people. And so he goes to hide out, but it's not the end. Vengeance is a two-edged sword. It cuts both ways. It cuts both parties. And so now more is going to happen. And behind it, I do see the Lord's still going to use Samson, but I still think Samson crippled himself to really be used the way that he could have been used, because everything he's doing, it's all about him still. Well, that was the society that he lived in. It's just all about them. So vengeance is better left to the Lord. Vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. Some things, better just let God handle it. We set out to seek vengeance, we're just going to make it worse. And we might be the ones end up really hurt, not the ones you think. All right. So we'll stop there tonight.